The following shiur is recorded, edited, and presented to you by Kol HaLashon. We wish you an enjoyable and meaningful time listening.
Just one moment. Torahway, Northwest London, Chof Gimel Kislev, Tov Shein Pei Aleph, Wednesday, 9th of December, Rabbi Aaron Hirsch, Why Celebrate Defeat?
Okay. So, if you were to ask the average individual why there is a Yom Tov of Hanukkah, right? Obviously, there's a Gemara in Shabbos that asks a very well-known question. But ask somebody who's come back from school, or the person to whom you are about to light the menorah, why are they doing this on Hanukkah? And they will give you one of two reasons. Either because we won the war, we were being oppressed by the Yevonim, it's one of the three exiles, four exiles rather, it's the third of the fourth exile, and we won the war, so understandable that we would celebrate this victory. The other would be, famously, we have a miracle with the Pach Shemen, whether it is simply the finding of it, whether it's the finding of it allied to the fact that it lasted beyond its natural capabilities. Either way, those are the two causes for Hanukkah, the war and the Nes Pach Shemen. There is only one slight problem, and that is that neither of these two make any sense whatsoever. Firstly, we didn't win the war. It's as simple as that. The Hanukkah story happens, if we're talking Jewish years, in the year 3597, around 2,200 years ago. And at that time, it is true that the sons of Matisyahu, with their army, regain control over the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore they are able to do a Chanukah Sabayis and light the menorah. That's true. But, firstly, within 2 to 3 years, they would be kicked out of Yerushalayim, and they would be fighting in Midbar Yehuda. Secondly, even while the Hanukkah story happens, they might have the Beis HaMikdash, they don't have Yerushalayim. As you will know probably from tours you will have taken of the old city of Yerushalayim, there is the upper city and the lower city. The upper city is what would correspond with the Jewish quarter today, and the lower city is near the area where you walk to the Kotel. And that's why, you know, between the one and the other, there's all these steps. The upper city was still under the control of the Greeks. They had a fortress where, roughly where Migdal David is today, near the Jaffa Gate. And that was still Greek territory. So not only had they not conquered Yerushalayim in a way that would be permanent, but even Yerushalayim itself had not been conquered. It was fragmentary. And we know that Matisyahu has five sons. We know that four of them die in battle against the Greeks. When? When? After the Hanukkah story. The war carries on, and all of the stories that we are familiar with those four sons, how they died, where they died, that's all in the 23 years after Hanukkah. And only Shimon lives to see peace. I can't necessarily call it victory, but they sue for peace, and the Greeks give in because they've had so much hassle from a quarter of a century of warfare. And in Jewish years, in the year 3620, that episode comes to a close. So if you want to celebrate the victory of the war over the Greeks, at best, it's a quarter of a century later, at a time which isn't necessarily confirmed. It's got nothing to do with Hanukkah. As for the miracle of the oil, surely that's enough of a reason for the Yontif? Also not. There is a klal that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not put aside Teva for no good reason. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not make miracles happen unless it has to happen. Think of Kriyas Yamsuf. But here, there is a klal that Tumah is either Hutro or Dchuyah B'tzibur, in which case, you look at the Gemara Psochim, what happens if there's a rove of Tumah. So you carry on the Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash, the Tumah. Which means that there was no necessity for this nes whatsoever. They could have taken shemen, which was tomei, poured it into a menorah, which was tomei, and used it for the avodah. So there's opinions that talk about when it's chinuch for the first time, but generally speaking, the mahalach would be that there was no need for this nes whatsoever. In which case, we have the question of why Hanukkah exists as Yom Tov. It's not for the war, it's not for the oil. Now, I could leave you at this point and get you to do your own research, but then it'd only haul me back in and get me to do another. I may as well do it now. There are two ancillary questions. The first is that, as you're all aware, the way in which we carry out the mitzvah of Hanukkah is Mahadrin min HaMahadrin. You're not going to see anybody who on the sixth night of Hanukkah just lights one light. Hagam, it's quite clear that you can make a bracha over it. It's quite clear that you have been yotza, the halachic requirement of Hadlokas Ner Hanukkah. But nobody does. Everybody becomes a fanatic. It's not good. Even Mahadrin isn't good enough. No, we need Mahadrin min HaMahadrin. Nothing less will do. Pesach, Hanukkah, Eichat Esther. And finally, the Bach, in his introduction to why all the Golus of Yovan happens, explains his Rashlu min HaAvoidah. The Kehanim were lazy about doing the Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash. And the punishment doesn't seem to fit the crime. All those years of brutal occupation of the Gezeris that we went through, because people turned up 10 minutes late for work, quite seemed to fit the bill. So there was no victory, there was no miracle. Why do we become so fanatic about the carrying out of the mitzvah? And what does Yisrash Rumin Avodah mean? So for this, we need to go back 150 years before the story of Hanukkah. Alexander the Great is in the empire building business, and at a remarkably young age, because he dies at 33, will conquer most of the civilized world, parts of Europe, parts of Asia, parts of Africa. And at one stage, before the empire is complete, he will attack Eretz Yisrael, which may have Jews in, but is not under Jewish control. It's under Persian control. They are the ones who allowed the Yidden, around 40 years prior to that day, to go back and build Bais Sheni. He is attacking, so the Yidden are on the side of the Persians, because it's the Persians that allowed them to go back, which doesn't work out so well when he wins, because they were on the losing side. And he marches on Yerushalayim with the intention of destroying it, encouraged by the quote-unquote good Samaritans, who were anything but good. They were urging Alexander the Great to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. And he meets Shimon HaTzadik, which is a whole meisa in its own right, and allows not only the Beis HaMikdash to stand, but agrees not to bring Avodah Zarah into Yerushalayim. The one and only thing he imposes on the Yidden is that they will pay tax. They are a conquered nation. They will pay tax. Who is in charge of tax collection? So he puts Shimon HaTzadik in charge. Shimon HaTzadik is Mishiyari Anshei Knesset HaGdola. He is both the spiritual and the temporal leader of Klal Yisrael. And he is the one who is tasked with being the interface between the Greeks and the Yidden, which works well as long as Shimon HaTzadik is alive and as long as Alexander the Great is alive. Both of these will come to a close shortly afterwards. Shimon HaTzadik dies, and the problem is that the office of Kahuna Gedola is still the one that's in charge of tax collection, which means if you are a Kohen Gadol, you now have power and money because you've been given the remit by the Greeks to collect tax. The Greeks aren't too fussy which city you got it from, which people you got it from, or virtually how you got it. Just bring me money. And therefore, if any place, if any individual would say, I'm not paying, the Kohen Gadol just calls in the Greek army, end of story, it's not going to happen again. So it's a get-quick-rich scheme and contains an inordinate amount of power. To give you an idea, during Bayis Rishon and Bayis Sheni stand for approximately the same amount of time. During Bayis Rishon, there were 18 Kehanim Gedolim. During Bayis Sheni, there were over 300. Why? Because being a Kohen Gadol was a power struggle. And people would go to the Greeks to become confirmed as the Kohen Gadol, bribe the Greeks. The Greeks are fine, no problem. We don't care who's the Kohen Gadol, we just want our money. At one stage, the person who was the Kohen Gadol wasn't even a Kohen. It didn't bother him. He wasn't going to do the Avodah in Yom Kippur. He wasn't going to do any type of Avodah. He just wanted money and power. And this became an entirely corrupt office and allowed the influence of Hellenism, of Misyavnim, to come to town. Now, one other thing, we said that not only did Shimon HaTzadik die and allow the position of Kahuna Gedola to become completely corrupt, but Alexander the Great died. Alexander the Great built this empire, which is now split into three. There's a European general that takes over, one that takes over in Asia, and one that takes over in Africa. Who is piggy in the middle? Between all of those three empires, Eretz Yisrael. They are located on the nexus between all of these three empires. Initially, they are controlled by the Egyptians, the Ptolemaic Empire, with its library in Alexandria, and that's when the Targum HaShivim, the translation of Torah into Greek, takes place. And under them, there will be this Hellenization to the degree that, we don't have any type of statistics, but potentially 20% of Klal Yisrael becomes Greek. Greek in dress, Greek in name, Greek in outlook. And this trend seems to be continuing. And the Kehanim have a large chelik in it. The Gemaras that talk about daughter who takes a sandal and hits it against the Mizbeach, is that we are all using Greek names in this, in these Gemaras. And that means that Klal Yisrael is facing an internal crisis. Why? Why is Hellenism attractive? Because unlike the Babylonians and the Persians, the Greeks offer knowledge, culture, wisdom, shipbuilding, mathematics, poetry. This is the first time that an occupying force has offered something other than its soldiers. What is being seen here for the first time is chokhmah, is wisdom that's not from within, not from Torah. And Druze have always been literate. They've always been interested in knowledge. And therefore, they go for this Greek way of life. Eventually, the balance of power will shift, and it is now the Syrian Greeks that are in charge of Eretz Yisrael. They are no different in the sense of, once again, language, but also philosophy. It doesn't make any difference. When we talk about the Greeks at the time of Hanukkah, we actually do not mean the country at all. We mean an ideology, because they were actually in Syria. Remember,
Kol HaLashon.
In, I think it's 2007, very end of 2007, I was running a group in Athens. And I was there the night before, because it was an American group, and I met up with the Rav there. And he showed me a siddur in which it didn't say Yevonim nikbatsu alai in Moiz Tzur. It said Hasurim nikbatsu alai, the Syrians, which geographically is true. Ideologically, it was the Yevonim, but I guess they didn't want to say the wrong thing while in Greece. They want to stir up bad memories. And therefore, it is Syrian in origin, but Greek in outlook. They now decide from their capital city, Antioch, hence Antiochus, they decide to move from the carrot to the stick. They've got a lot of Yidden now on their side, but still a minority, and they now decide to impose the gzeiros that we are aware of, Chodesh, Milah, Shabbos, Torah, etc. At this stage, this is in the year 3594, 3 years before the story that we are familiar with, at this stage, Matisyahu Ulvanov go to war. They take a decision that if we remain under Greek control in the way it will now manifest, Lomali Chaim, what's the point? And therefore, they decide it is worth dying rather than submitting. They haven't got the Havamina that they're going to win this war. They're outnumbered 100-1. The Greek army, the Greek empire, impossible. But it's better to die than to live and be Ovid Avodah Zarah, to live without Shabbos, etc. What happens miraculously is that there is a respite. There is a brief period during this war, 3 years later, where they manage to gain control over the Beis HaMikdash and manage to light the menorah. But they haven't won the war. They've won a battle. But what we are celebrating is the fact that this decision was taken in the first place, and that the decision resulted in Chanukah Habayis, because it's a decision that put Klal Yisrael back on the right track. A decision that reminded everybody why we are who we are. What is the Am HaNivchar? Why is there a Beis HaMikdash? That is what we're celebrating on Hanukkah. And since Hanukkah is the only one of the Yomim Tovim that has no Nevuah, Purim might be Drabonon, but it's got a Sefer in Nach. Hanukkah happens without any direct communication. What HaKadosh Baruch Hu says by creating the Nes of the Pach Shemen is that you have done the extraordinary, the Mahadrin Mina Mahadrin, of going to fight an impossible war. I, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, will respond Mahadrin Mina Mahadrin with an unnecessary Nes to show you where our relationship is. And therefore, to go back to our original questions, they didn't win the war, the real war they won. The war that says this is who Klal Yisrael is and what they stand for. That war they won. Why the Nes Shemen? Because this is the Hashgachas HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even when there isn't Nevuah, this is the message that is being sent. Why do we light Mahadrin Min HaMahadrin, everybody? Because that is what's being asked of us. Are you only carrying out halacha because you have to, because it's law? Or are you doing it because you want to, because you identify with Yiddishkeit, because this is a way of life that you would choose, not just because you were born as a Jew? And if it's something that you would choose, that you want, then you don't do the minimum baseline. You carry things out, Mahadrin Min HaMahadrin, because it's meaningful. It's what you want to do. On the opposite side, Me'idach Kisa, the Bach telling us that the occupation of the Yevonim takes place because Hisrashlu Min HaAvodah, they were lazy, that shows the exact opposite. What does that mean? I don't really want to be here. I far prefer to be somewhere else. Not us. I've got to carry out certain services because I'm a Kohen. And that's exactly what the daughter of this Kohen says when she comes into the Beis HaMikdash, this daughter who is almost Greek. She's definitely Greek in outlook. What does the Mizbeach do? It forces us to bring Korbanos. It makes Korbanos into that English word, sacrifice. I'm giving up to, you know, in pagan philosophies, to appease an angry god. Which is why Rav von Hirsch points out that when you look at the parasha of Korbanos, you don't find Elohim. You only find Shem Havaya. To understand that you're not doing this mitzad midas ha-din, but mitzad midas ha-chesed, because it's a relationship that you've got with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's an offering, not a sacrifice. But she doesn't see it that way. And if you ever go to the model of Yerushalayim during Bayis Sheni, which nowadays is in the grounds of the Israel Museum, used to be in the Holy Land Hotel, and you walk around it, you'll see the Beis HaMikdash, and very near it, you'll see something that looks awfully like a Roman, or a Greek rather, amphitheater. Very near the Beis HaMikdash, very near the... When you get off the bus nowadays, near the Kosel, you have a protruding piece of rock. That is Robinson's Arch. That was a walkway that led into the Beis HaMikdash. Quite near it, if you ever go and have a look at this model, you'll see a semi-circular building, very Greek in design. Literally a stone's throw from the Beis HaMikdash. What's it doing there? It was very Greek, but it was built by the Yidden, voluntarily. And there were Yidden who, with the Beis HaMikdash in sight, would be hanging out in this Greek place of sport, because that's how they now identified. And in fact, the Olympic Games that we are aware of, the original Olympic Games, which come from Mount Olympia, which are very Greek in origin, was for men only, had to be performed in the nude, and if any Jews wanted to participate, they had to reverse the signs of Bris Milah. So this isn't something that you undertake because, you know, you put your name down on the list and you're going to race. This is an ideology that we're talking. And this was reversed by Matisyahu Uvono. This is really where the Nitzachon of Nes Chanukah takes place. Now, it's interesting. First pasuk in the Torah, Bereishis Bara Elokim Es HaShamayim Es HaAretz. The second pasuk, V'Ha'aretz, what was creation, what was the world like? Ha'isah Toyu Uvoyhu V'Choshech Al Pnei Tahoim. Four expressions of negativity. Paralleling the four Goliaths. Void, chaos. The third one we can translate, Choshech, darkness. That is Yovan. Yovan is titled as darkness. which is a strange adjective to use, because I understand that it was brutal. I understand that it was a golus. But the Maisa, they brought a lot of advances into the world. They brought a lot of things which we are still heir to this very day. So I could think of various words to describe Greek occupation. I wouldn't have come up with the word Cheshech necessarily. So it's interesting. Cheshech has two very different potential functions. It can conceal or it can contrast. Concealing means it is the only show in town. There is only darkness. It's a layer which says there is nothing else. It's my way or the highway. Or it can serve as a backdrop, as an environment. As we know from the first Daf Sochin, recent Daf Yomi learning, Oyer La'abor Osa, we only use the candle to do Bedikas Chometz when it has become dark, because the darker it is, the more you can see the light of the candle. And therefore, if there is a really dark environment, the darker it is, the more brightly you see the light of Torah. If that's the function of Yefes, if it's Yaft Elekim LeYefes but the Yishkein Ba'ohol LeShein, if its place is to serve as a handmaiden to Shein, to Torah, if it serves as a backdrop, then the more darkness there is, the more knowledge that is discovered out there, the more that can be put to use to seeing the light of Torah. There can be a relationship, as there was between the original meeting between Alexander the Great and Shimon HaTzadik. But the moment it takes over, the moment it becomes the only show in town, then we are in trouble. Lots of trouble. And that's why we light the menorah at night, the Ein Lon Rishus Lishtamesh Behem, the exact opposite of Ner Shabbos, where we are supposed to need to have Hanor from the Neris. Here it's the opposite. If you're not allowed to have Hanor from Neris Hanukkah, wouldn't it be a better idea to light them during the day when you won't be tempted? Slipnei Iver, every night you're lighting and then you have to tell yourself and remind yourself, do it during the daylight, it's much easier. Hogufa, the whole point is to understand the relationship between darkness and light, between the Yevonim and Klal Yisrael. And that's why, what did the Yevonim do when they occupied the Beis HaMikdash? They didn't destroy it. They just turned it into a tourist attraction. They didn't take it apart. We talk about Golus Yavon. Normally, in order to have a Golus, you need to be out of the country that you're in. That's what happens with the other three. But here you've got Golus Yavon while you're living in Eretz Yisrael with a standing Beis HaMikdash. But what's the point? They have voided it of its Kedusha. What did they do to the oil? They didn't use it. They didn't destroy it. They were metameh it. Now, oil which is tameh and oil which is tohor can fry your donuts equally. They have exactly the same chemical properties. Nafka mina is that beneath the surface, that which is Kedusha doesn't exist anymore. And therefore, in the same way as going back to the origins of Yavon, Yavon is Yefes, the idea of beauty. You can have beauty which is literally skin deep, which has no hashpah. It just exists. It's just there. That's a very Western idea. But you can have a beauty which is external, but reflects the internal. At that stage, it's a beauty worth having. But when the oil can only do all of its physical properties, but none of its ruchni one, then you've taken the life out of it. When the Beis HaMikdash stands as a building, But all it can be done is viewed on, you know, Monday afternoons if you pay the tour guide. And it has no purpose. It is the teichin that makes the difference. If we are hisrashlu min avoda, then what we are saying is, you know, okay, fine, but every so often we'll pay our dues. But really, we want to hang out in the amphitheater. That's home. But if we are doing it mahadrin min amahadrin, we are saying this really matters to us. This is who we really are. And over that, it's worth having a Yom Tov. Over that, it's worth HaKadosh Baruch Hu responding with a neis. And over that, it is worth us carrying out a mitzvah, not in the minimal way, but in the best way possible. I'll leave it there.
The shiur you've listened to was recorded and edited for you by Kol HaLashon. You're invited to continue listening at any time to all the shiurim and drushos in all topics by all the Rabbanim on Kol HaLashon.